But even if I'm not caught, and even if they don't retaliate and cause further suffering and pain for me, I'm eaten up with guilt because I know that I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing. If my basic instinct for security is so strong that it makes me steal from you and take money out of your pocket, maybe you'll never find out I stole it, and maybe you'll never retaliate. I'm scared to death you're going to, and that robs me of peace of mind. But even if you don't catch me, I'm eaten up with guilt because I know the difference between right and wrong. Remember that Silkworth tells us that we have got to find peace of mind. We've got to get rid of this restlessness and irritability and discontent, or we always go back and seek the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Now, before I can get rid of the things that rob me of peace of mind, I must find out what they are. As Joe says, I must identify these things before I can do anything about them. And step four tells me exactly how to identify the things that are robbing me of peace of mind.
I guess it's about time for a break. But Charlie said, we know we've got many, many things that go on in our emotional lives that makes us uncomfortable. And I think it comes from these three basic instincts. We got a lot of other things. We have jealousy and greed and guilt. And to me, I think that guilt to me is fear of the past. And I had a lot of dread, which is fear of the future. I had a lot of jealousy. And I think we can take these basic instincts and we become professionals at mixing these things. And, of course, we make all sorts of hideous colors out of these three basic patterns. Every other thing is painted out of these three basics, and our program just gives us, we're going to work on the basics. See, I could be jealous of Charlie because of the jacket he has on, and it hurts my security because I get a little fear that he's getting ahead of me. He has something that I doesn't have. And so, you know, I resent him. It's a little resentment probably is the base of jealousy. And then I have a little fear that he's getting ahead of me. And then jealousy also contains, he's punctured my little ego, my little image. So jealousy is contained in all three of these things. A jealousy is made up of a combination. And I had a lot of this. Of course, quite naturally, if I wanted to really get mad at Charlie, I'd take out the jacket and I'd put in a woman. And the jealousy would go up. And the only thing I've added was sex. So you see, this is the way that we make ourselves uncomfortable. And this great book, this great step forward, shows us that they're not to chase all these things, but learn the basics. It teaches us our basic instincts. And it teaches us in great detail of looking and examining these things. And this is what step four is all about. Well, are we ready for a break?
Yeah.
We'll stop and have a coffee break.
At this point, I might ask a question. How many of you own a 12 and 12? Hey, that's good. That's good. I know I fool with this section of the big book on step four for a long time, and I just couldn't hardly understand what he was talking about here when he'd talk about self-esteem and pride and prestige and et cetera, until finally I did get a hold of a copy of the 12 and 12 and went in and started studying it. And this was, I think, the breakthrough for me to begin to understand character defects and to begin to understand how these character defects control my life. And when I once learned that they come from the three basic instincts, then I had identified what my real problem is, why I'm always resentful, why I'm so fearful, and why do I keep on wanting to do things that I know I shouldn't be doing. And in the 12 and 12, in the area of 4, 5, 6, and 7, and it goes deeper into it than the big book does, and it talks about the seven deadly sins. That I don't particularly like the word sins. Again, you know, I'm agnostic, and I still can't get rid of all that, and when you say the word sin, it kind of turns me off. But 12 and 12 says the seven deadly character sins, or seven deadly sins. I refer to them usually as the seven major character defects or personality defects or whatever you want to call them. But it tells me that every emotional problem that I have stems from one of the three basic instincts of life. And it tells me the seven major character defects that I have, and they are they are in all human beings to one degree or another, is pride, greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. And it tells me that all seven of these character defects stem from one of the three basic instincts. And again, as an intellectual alcoholic, and I know you're not going to write these down, we don't have the time, but as an intellectual alcoholic, I had to go back to the dictionary again. Words I don't understand don't do me any good at all. And if I read a word in the big book or the 12 and 12 and I don't know what it means, if I don't go find out what it means, I might as well have not read it because it hadn't conveyed any thought or idea to me at all. So I went to the dictionary and I looked up these seven things. And pride, according to the dictionary, is usually attempting to impress others or building our own self-image, an excessive belief or disbelief in one's own worth. You know, and we're filled with this pride. We're always trying to impress other people. That's a natural instinct. We're always trying to build up our own self-image, trying to make ourselves appear as good or better than other people. And many of us throughout our lifetime have always felt that we didn't quite measure up, that we were always on the outside looking in. And I think this is one of the reasons that I enjoyed drinking that old booze so much. When I drank that old booze, man, I didn't have any of that stuff of being afraid of other people, or I wasn't afraid I'd make a mistake. I wasn't afraid I'd stumble and fall on the dance floor. Pride is one of the major character defects that practically all human beings have, and we alcoholics seem to have it to an excessive degree. Greed. Greed is an insatiable desire to possess things beyond our own needs. And if I become a very greedy person and I start trying to accumulate all these material things, there's no way in the world that I can have peace of mind. Lust. Lust is a desire to desire something to the excess, usually associated with sexual desires. Now, we can lust after many things, but normally it's associated with sexual desires, and it's desiring something to the excess. Anger. Anger is a feeling of displeasure because of supposed mistreatment, usually showing itself in a desire to fight back. Gluttony. Gluttony is indulging in anything to the excess, usually associated with food. Envy. Envy is jealousy of another's possessions, unhappy because you can't have the same thing. Sloth. Sloth is simply laziness. I love it in the 12 and 12 when it says procrastination is nothing more than a five-syllable word for sloth. And you know, I look at my life today and I search my life today. And any time that I become one of these seven things, any time that I become angry, any time that I become resentful, any time that I become fearful or jealous or envious, I search myself to find out why, and I find always that one of the three basic instincts have been threatened. And in step four, what we are really attempting to do is to find out how these things rob us of peace of mind. To find out how the resentments rob us of peace of mind and what causes those resentments. To find out how fears rob us of peace of mind and what causes those fears. To find out how the different character defects that I have cause me to be restless and irritable and discontented. And if I've taken step four and I've taken it thoroughly, and I've taken it completely to the best of my ability, I'm going to be able to look at these things, and I'm going to be able to say, well, here, this resentment that I have toward this guy over here was caused by jealousy. It was caused by greed. It was caused by lust. It was caused by anger. It was caused by fear. If I look at this thing real closely, I'm going to be able to see where this fear here is caused from my pride. And if I carefully review my past and see where my conduct hurts others, I'm going to be able to see, well, yeah, greed caused me to steal that guy's money. Lust caused me to do this. And I can begin to see the things that block me from carrying out the decision that I made in step three. I can begin to identify the things that I need to start working on. I can begin to identify the things that I need to start getting rid of if I want to have peace of mind. Now, it's impossible for the human mind to think of more than one thing at a time. You know, this taking an inventory in your mind, you can only look at one thing at a time. And if I'm taking an inventory in my mind and where I'm thinking about that one particular person that I hurt, I can't see all the others that I hurt. I can only see that one. If I'm thinking of that resentment against that one person, that's the only thing I can see in my mind at that time, and I can't see the other resentments. But if I will put these on paper, for the first time in my life, I've been able to see me. And you know, when I came to AA, I thought I was a pretty good fellow. I thought I just drank a little too much whiskey. I didn't steal except when I absolutely had to. I didn't lie unless it was absolutely necessary, and I thought that I was a pretty nice guy. But when I once put it on paper and got it all down and got all these resentments and all these fears and all these wrongs on a piece of paper, and I looked at it and I thought, my God, is this really me? You see, honesty is mentioned three times in the beginning of how it works. Step four is the first time in our life that we're going to be honest with ourselves. Always before, anything that Charlie did that wasn't right, Charlie hid it in the back of his mind and never looked at it. Never did try to find out what caused it. Never did try to find out anything about it at all. Simply hid it away. And in step four, this was my first attempt to really look at me and find out, why am I resentful? Why am I fearful? Why do I keep on hurting people when I don't even want to hurt them? And unless I can find out why, I don't know what to work on. You know, it doesn't do any good to say anger is my problem. I've got to find out what causes anger. It doesn't do any good for me to say that stealing is my problem. I've got to find out why I steal. It doesn't do any good for me to say that sex is my problem. I've got to find out why I want to keep on doing them damn things. Because even if I don't go do them and still want to do them, that robs me of peace of mind. And Silkworth tells me, without peace of mind, I've had it. I'll go back and look for the sense of ease and comfort which comes by taking a few drinks.
Next, we're going to turn over to another chapter, Into Actions. Into Actions, we find, we'll begin with step five. We found three and four, our first steps that the book mentioned and how it works. Into Action is contained on the first page, the fifth step. And you can see how, having made a personal inventory, what shall we do? And he ties in the other steps. And he shows you how precisionally these inner steps interlock. As we have discovered the nature of our problem for the first time in our lives, that we see ourselves, our character defects, and our shortcomings, we see the things that have been blocking our growth. Then the next step to recovery is to bring these things to the surface, to kind of bring them out to where we can begin to deal with them in steps six and seven, the eliminating steps. And I think that step five is a very necessary part of a program, and it plays a unique part. Now, it's not an eliminating step. It's not a step that's going to get rid of anything, but still yet it plays an important role. And to me, it's sort of like going to the dentist. You know, you got going to the dentist is sort of like step one and two. You know, I got a toothache, and I'm powerless over it. I don't like it. And the dentist is a solution, but I don't like that either. But I have to make a decision somewhere along the line to either keep the toothache or go to the dentist. And when I go into the dentist's office, he opens the mouth and he takes an inventory. You know, he looks in there and he sees it. But he don't reach in there with no pliers. You know, the first thing he's got to do is settle me down, and he's got to give me a sedative to ease this thing before we can eliminate it. And to me, step five is a greater sedative. That's the role it plays, because an inventory is a pretty hurting thing. And then this beautiful step is there that able to open up the sores of our minds and bring this thing to the surface. And this step talks about it's a very necessary part of the program. Although it does not eliminate anything, if it itself was eliminated from the program, it would make it very difficult. It's in this step that we have three steps. And there are some things, some of these steps that encompasses more ideas than one. And step five to me encompasses three ideas. And I think that our book says precisely, and it says follow our path. And it says, you know, take it easy here. And we got three things to do is encompassing this idea of the fifth step. Number one, it says to talk to God about the exact nature of our wrongs. Well, this is is the least difficult of the whole thing. Because, you know, we can safely assume that he has some knowledge of this already. Now, the next most difficult step, and although it is written, it's not exactly written out in three steps, but in the way the language, we can read it through. The next difficult thing here, the next most difficult thing, is to talk to ourselves about it. This is the second step of the fifth step. And then it rises in intensity. And the most difficult situation is to talk to another human being about what you saw in step four. Now, I think the greatest difficulty we as people is having is being a hurry in this program, that the biggest thing that will keep you from working step five is always staring at the last part of it, that we do not talk to God, then ourselves, and then try to another human being. If it's worked precisely, specific, as it's laid out, we need not have difficulty with step five. And I think that this is where a lot of us, I know I did, and most people, we do not try it on ourselves. God, then ourselves, then another human being. Now, it says that this is a necessary step. And again, it says on top of page 7, when we decided to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory. I still don't get away. I don't see how we get these other cats. We have a written inventory. And we're prepared for a long talk. And we go in to this phase of relating this situation to another person. And I think it's easy to begin done if a fourth step, if we see that what has caused these things is something within us, then we can talk about it. We pocket our pride, eliminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone and peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We do not feel our Creator, but at step five, we are beginning to feel the nearness of our Creator. We're not there yet. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, came to believe at step two. That's where we started. But now, we are beginning to have a spiritual experience. We started believing, but at step five, we are beginning to have a spiritual experience. The feeling of the drink problem has disappeared will often come stronger. We'll feel we are not on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And then we have a great little pause, and I think I like the way he gives us some rest, because this is a very difficult thing we're going through. And he says, returning home, we find a quiet place where we can be quiet for an hour. And this is our first pause since we started this program. Carefully, we redo what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him, that we know him better. We don't know him yet. We know him better. Taking this book down from our shelves, we return to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask, have we omitted anything? For we are building an arch, back to our little arch in step three, which we shall walk a free man. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And in step five, we bring the things to the surface that we discovered in steps four. John, we go on.
Also in step five, at this particular point, I think we have another warning in the book. Yeah. It says, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. We're asking ourselves, are we really powerless over alcohol? Do we really believe our life is unmanageable?
We're asking ourselves at this point, do we really believe there is a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity? We're asking ourselves at this point, have we really made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him? We're asking ourselves at this point, have we really taken a good inventory? Have we left anything out? Have we really put down all the wrongs that we've done in the past? Or is there something that we've kept hidden in the back of our mind and we didn't put it down on that piece of paper? And we're asking ourselves again, have we admitted this to God and to ourselves, and did we really admit it all to another human being? Is there something that I've still kept hidden inside myself and haven't revealed to another human being? We have a lady in our group at Siloam Springs, Arkansas, and she made a good four-step inventory, and she took it with a Methodist minister who is well-versed in human nature, did a fine job. And as she started out the door after about 3 or 4 hours of talking, she suddenly said to herself, I didn't tell him. And she had to stop, and she went, turned around, and she says, oh, by the way, Father, or minister, or brother, or whatever you call him, she says, oh, by the way, there is one thing I left out. And they went back, and they sat down, and they talked for another hour. And this is what this is asking me to do. Have I really completely done the first 5 steps? Remember that we're building this arch that we're going to walk through. Have we tried to do this halfway? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Have we tried to just do it the way we want to? Or have we really done it the way this thing says to do it specifically? And you know, if I've done it any other way than what this big book says to do it, I have not taken AA's 12 steps. I have not taken AA's first 5 steps if I do it any other way. I may have taken my version of it or somebody else's version of it, but AA's first 5 steps are the way the first 100 people took them. And I think they're warning me here that I better be careful. There's not going to be any sense in going on with the rest of this thing if I haven't done it to the best of my ability.
Well, we get over onto page 76, which is a very important page in the book. Because once we've identified these things in step 4, bring them to the surface in step 5, and 6 and 7, we're going to bring these things into some adjustments. We're going to bring down some of the things we have too much of, and we're going to try to grow in the areas of things where we are lacking. And once the bar of self is removed, then these adjustments can be made in these 2 steps once they're brought to the surface. And then looking at page 76, it kind of shocked me sometimes to look at it and study of it. I read it many, many times. But little did I know until quite a few months ago that page 76 contains 4 steps. It talks about 6, 7, 8, and 9. It's the only page in the book. It kind of crowns up there. It's kind of a log jam there. But he talks about it, and he says, if we brought these things to this ready, we're ready to eliminate now. We see the damaging factor. We see what we got, and we see how damaging it's been. And in relating it to another person and to God, even intensifies that. So we're ready to get rid of it at this point. If you can answer to your satisfaction on these first 5 proposals, then look at step 6. We have emphasized the willingness of being indispensable. Are we now ready to God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectable? And this is where we get to where these things are. We get into a lot of discussions about character defects and shortcomings, and it lumps them all together. And I don't know really today what I like to look at my. I know that I was very lacking in tolerance. Ooh, I couldn't tolerate nothing. I was very short of love, and I know that love is simply the ability to be concerned about another person's welfare. Self-centered people are not very much concerned about other people's welfare. And I had a lot of the Hollywood version of love, you know, but I didn't have too much of that concern for other people's welfare. Self-centered people like to change. They don't like to tolerate. And self-centered people can't time life. They are very intolerable. You know, life's got to run on his time. So we can see why these people may be, because of self, these great factors develop. Now, I really don't know, really, as the book says, that when you have done one, you have done the other. I really don't know. We're getting a lot of discussions about what my problem was. Was my problem fear or lack of courage? I don't know. Was my problem resentments, or was it the lack of love, tolerance, and patience? I don't know. And I think, but he puts them together and says, get rid of the things that were objectable. And right after we do six, he says, and the only mention in this book is four words, really, on step seven, because he says, we have completed step seven. You know, if you've done six, you have completed step seven. When you've done one, you done done the other. And it's kind of confusing here. So I think it's in these two steps, and basically the work there is four and five, and once I've done that, then I'm able to move these things. I'm able to bring, at the end of step seven, I get rid of the things that have grown out of self that make me uncomfortable. And at four, five, six, and seven, in these steps, I get right with me. I make these adjustments of the things that have grown out of self, the things that were blocking my growth in four, five, six, and seven. Charlie?
I think here that it's important that we might look for just a moment at the three terms that we use when we're dealing with these character defects. You know, step five says we admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And step seven says we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And the question's always coming up everywhere you go. Well, what's the difference between a exact nature of a wrong and a character defect and a shortcoming? And I think it's all tied together in one sentence in the first paragraph on page 76. It says, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? And the things that we have admitted are objectionable are the things that we found in steps four and five. And the objectionable things are what we're trying to get rid of that blocks us from doing God's will. And I don't think it makes any difference whether we call them the exact nature of a wrong, a defect of character, or a shortcoming. They're all things that we have found within our own characters that are objectionable to us. We now want to get rid of them. These are the things that we found when we took the inventory to disclose the unsaleable goods. Now, I've talked to three people that knew Bill Wilson, and I never did get to meet Bill, but I've talked to three people that knew him that tell me, all three tell me the same identical thing, that they asked Bill, why did you use exact nature of the wrongs in five? Why did you use defects of character in six? And why did you use shortcomings in seven? And Bill's answer to all three of these individuals was that when I was attending English courses in college, that they taught me never to use the same words to describe the same things in consecutive sentences. And Bill says there is no difference, that they are all the things that we want to get rid of. And it tells me, When I'm really ready to get rid of these objectionable things, it says, when ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven. Six and seven are bang-bang steps. If we really take a good inventory and a good fifth step, and we really see how these things are robbing us of peace of mind, and that's going to cause us to drink, by God, we want to get rid of them. And if we want to get rid of them, we ask him to take them away from us. And we don't need to complicate six and seven. They're very simple. They're very simple. Later on in the program, through years of sobriety, we find out more about character defects. We find out more about things that are objectionable. And we're continually going back to God and working with these things, but we have another step later on to take care of that. The main thing at this point is to get on with the program. We don't wait for perfection. In fact, the 12 and 12 says that step 6 is AA's way of saying that we aim toward perfection. That's what we're aiming at. We do not expect it, and we will never get it, and certainly we're not going to get it at this point.
but we need to get on with the program and do the best we can. Joe says, for the first time in our life, we're right with ourselves. For the first time in our life, we know what makes us tick. We know what we've got that's bad. We know what we've got that's good. We know what we need to work on. We're right with God. We got the right relationship with Him in steps 1, 2, and 3, that He's going to be the director and we're going to be the follower. And now at the end of step 7, we're right with ourselves. Now, if you're feeling right with yourself and you're feeling right with God, you're feeling pretty good. But remember, we still got lots of shame and guilt and remorse. And there's another area that we're going to have to get right with, too, before we really begin to develop this peace of mind.
Yeah, the last thing of recovery, last obstacle to recover is to get right with the world around us, to get right with our fellow man. And he says that, you know, because of 1, 2, to 3, the things that grow out of self, because these problems over here, and the resentments and fears and all our other problems, they come down and they cause people problems. So we've gotten right with God and we've gotten right with ourselves. Now we've got to get right with the world around us. And the first step of recovery, again, is an identifying step. We said step 1 was an identify. The first step in the series of these steps is always an identify. And when we got to work on ourselves, we had to take an inventory and identify what was wrong with us. This was an identifying step. Now, when we go to work on our relationship to the world around us, the first step is to identify what our problem is. Put it down. To identify it. And it's in step 8 that it tells us exactly how to do this. Now, the first thing we do to get over our people problems identified, make a list of all people we have harmed. That is the first step. And I think it's two things involved in this, and we can see the preciseness again in the steps of how we don't work them like we think they work, but precisely how they are laid out. The first thing we're told to do is to make a list, and I think that he says that this list should have been made when we took the inventory. We have a list of all persons we have harmed, whom we've been willing to make amends to. We made the list when we took the inventory, as Charlie designed it. So we have this list. And the next step in the step 8 is, after we make the list, then we become willing to the list. There's two things there. Now, it's real simple to make a list of the people you've harmed with honesty. And I think, as we were talking last night, the greatest thing that keeps us from working, making the list, is thinking about what we're going to have to do in 9. But we ain't on 9 yet. You know, we make the list of the people we have harmed, and the next phase is to become willing to the list. So there are two things there to do in step 8. Direct ourselves to do this. And then in 9, it says, tells us what to do, and we can see the preciseness. Make direct amends. That is the first thing there. And then it tells us who to. Such people. The ones on the list. And then step 9, it later proceeds on further. And sometimes we hear in discussions, I like to hear people read the steps at the meetings, and I listen to these things. And the repetition of it sometimes, people change it so much. But this is a spiritual step, and this process is involved with God. And God is in step 9 when we say, wherever possible. This is His determination. Not whenever, as you often hear it read. No. But wherever. And God determines the wherever. Now it tells you what to do, who to do to it, and where to do it. And then it says when not to do it. When to do so would injure them or others. If we take our time and precisely go through these steps, they're not difficult at all. But God plays a role in the wherever. And I know that I made this list as an individual. And it was tough. And then I became willing to the list. And then I made direct amends to these people as God made it possible. And I do not, I still have some of these people on the list, by the way. It's not possible. And some of them, it would injure them or others. So they are still on the list. And I know that we need not have fear. We're supposed to get rid of that back up here in the other steps. And in these two steps I identified, there are two steps in the people problem solving steps. One is to identify the problem, and the other is to eliminate it. And in these two steps, we get right with the world around us. And of course, our book tells us, you know, that we promise to go to any length. And it has to pry us on. You just got one more hill to climb. This is the last thing. And he begins to beg us, and he begins to gradually say, you have come this far. Because we know that this is one more hill to climb. And it's after this that we have the great promises of the book, because they are fulfilled after steps 8 and 9. Charlie? I always call these Charlie's promises.
If we have now taken steps 8 and 9 and taken them thoroughly and completely to the best of our ability and taken them like the book has said, we're now right in three different areas. We got right with God in steps 1, 2, and 3. We decided God was going to be the director, that we could no longer run the show. We got right with ourselves in step 4, 5, 6, and 7. We found out what's within us that blocks us from letting God be the director. We got honest with ourselves. We got right with people around us in steps 8 and 9. Now, at this point, we should be feeling pretty good. You know, if you're right with God, and you're right with yourself, and you're right with everybody around you and all the people that you've dealt with, you ought to be feeling good. And at this point, we reach the 11 promises contained in the big book. And at the beginning of these 11 promises, we once again have a warning. We have a condition. And at the bottom of page 83, the last paragraph, this is a person that has just completed, to the best of his ability, the first 9 steps. And it says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, if we are painstaking, if we have done it to the best of our ability, if we've really worked at the first 9 steps, this is what we're going to experience. We will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. You remember Silkworth says, when we're sober, we're restless and irritable and discontented. Now we're going to know, we're going to comprehend the word serenity. To comprehend the word serenity, you've got to experience it. And if you have serenity, you're not restless and irritable and discontented. And we're going to know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Do you remember the story in Chapter 2 when Dr. Jung talked about the spiritual experience? Where he had seen people recover once in a while when old ideas and old concepts and old motives were suddenly cast aside and replaced with new ones. Here's the promise. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. You remember when we talked about lack of power, that was our dilemma? That the purpose of this book is to enable each of us to find a power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. We will suddenly realize that this power is solving our problems. We will suddenly realize that he's doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Another condition. You don't get these things without working.
You don't get these things without taking lots of effort. And these promises will come true if we work for them. And I've gone back and analyzed these problems and analyzed me and analyzed these promises. And you know what I've realized is that used to, when I first started drinking, before alcohol became a serious problem in my life, when I drank, I had these promises. When I drank, my fear of people left me. When I drank, my fear of economic insecurity left me. When I drank, I intuitively knew how to handle situations. Every promise that's contained here is exactly what I used to get out of alcohol when alcohol was my friend. I comprehended the word serenity, and I knew peace whenever I drank, you know. I suddenly am realizing that this program is giving me the same identical thing that I used to get from alcohol before alcohol became a problem. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this great? Now then, the book tells me that after these promises, that this thought now brings us to step 10. And I'm like Joe. I'm not going to belittle step 10 by saying step 10 is a maintenance step. Step 10 is a growth step. When we look at step 10 first and read it, it looks like it would be a maintenance step if it was done exactly like it, the step reads. Where it says we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And in the reading of the step, we begin to think that, well, all I've got to do is inventory and see who I've wronged, and if I've wronged somebody, make amends for it. But that isn't what the book says to do. The book says this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now let's look at that for just a moment. We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. What step is that? What step is that? Step 4. Continue to inventory myself, watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. This is step 4. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. What am I dealing with? Step 6 and step 7. We discuss them with someone immediately. What step am I dealing with? I'm dealing with 5. Then, if I've harmed someone, I make amends quickly. What steps am I dealing with? 8 and 9. Now, if I will practice step 10, the way the book says to practice it, on a continual daily basis, I am always working steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And as long as I work steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on a daily basis, then I'm going to get rid of more and more and more character defects. I'm going to have more love and tolerance for other human beings. I'm not going to be building up the shame and the guilt and the remorse over the things that I do. Step 10 is one of the greatest, greatest growth steps contained within the program. It's not just a maintenance step. It's a growth step.
Yeah, really, I like to think that step 10 is 3, too, because self, you know, we got rid of self at 3, so it mentions watch for that. So really, it's an overlay of the first 9 steps. And if we work the 10th step, if you work the first 9 steps in a few months in the program and arrive to this great point, then if you were to rework this each day through the 10th step, you would grow each time you worked. You would improve. As Charlie said, after these promises are fulfilled, later on, you know, we went to last night and back in Appendix 2, And they talked about a spiritual awareness. And you came to believe at step two, and once you came to believe, you put the actions into your belief, and you worked those rest of those other steps, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and you clean up all these areas. And then these things begin to take place in your life. Now, when all this peace and happiness and you comprehend the word serenity and all these things become to your life, and you become aware of this, you no longer believe in God because you're getting results and you have faith. So at step 9, you become to know that God has worked. And belief is sort of like a tadpole. It has to turn into the frog to really be something. So this is where we become to know that God has worked, because we see the existence of these things in our lives. And we continue to grow by working in step 10. And then it gives us great results, because it says after step 10, some more problems, some more things begin to take place in our lives. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even liquor. For by this time, sanity will have returned, and we will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will cough from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward alcohol has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it all. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We thought we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist. We are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react as long as we are in a spiritual fit condition. And one day along the line, after these great promises are met and we keep on working step 10, we wake up one day as I...